Welcome to What Is Going On's Truth in Medicine Show. Each month, broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer and naturopathic medical doctor, researcher, and global health educator Dr. Donice Warden bring you the latest news and research from leading-edge science and new integrative medicine to help you outsmart cancer, chronic disease, aging, and more. Here's your hosts, Dr. Donice Warden and Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello, and welcome back to the Truth in Medicine show. It isn't often that you come across a book about science and medicine that reads like a thriller, full of revelations and cover-ups, amazing highs and heartbreaking lows, blind alleys and striking moments of discovery, and a truly exciting ending. But tonight's guest, science researcher and author Travis Christofferson, has pulled it off.
Yes, he has, Sandy. And I'll tell our listeners a little bit about Travis. He is a graduate of the Montana State Honors Program in Molecular Biology. And his graduate research in bioremediation and cancer theory culminated in a master's degree in material engineering and science. And as that science writer and author, his groundbreaking book, Tripping Over the Truth, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer, boldly challenges our current understanding and treatment of mankind's most feared disease. And when I read Travis's book years ago, I was immediately lecturing at a medical conference. I think it was in Reno, Nevada, and I saw that he was attending the conference. And I had my groups that had brought me to that conference say, you go find Travis Christofferson so I can meet him. Since then, I've come to know Travis's intellect, his integrity, and we even have some collaborations now in helping cancer patients. Welcome, Travis.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Travis, your book, Tripping Over the Truth, I mean, it challenges everything that we thought we knew about the disease. And it's suggesting that the reason for the failed war against cancer stems from a flawed paradigm that categorizes cancer as an exclusively genetic disease. So tell us, how is it possible that we could have mischaracterized the true nature of cancer?
That's a great, great broad question to jump into it. And you know, I think those things, Sandy, when you look just at the way history unfolds, especially science, right? It's a very sort of sweeping, broad, long-term thing where there's no like sudden epiphany moment where we say, oh, we got this wrong. It takes generations where the evidence accumulates. There's very rarely a very good consensus in biology. You know, you can have 100 studies on the same phenomenon and say 85% will allude to one sort of mechanism and the other 15% will allude to a different one. So it's a sort of, we look at a preponderance of evidence over time. And cancer is not, you know, we're not looking at a simple mechanism here. We're looking at a narrative. This disease is so complex that it's, you know, it takes evidence from multiple angles over lifetimes, basically, before we get a good, you know, the true story of what's going on in there. And that's still unfolding. And so the book that I wrote was about these scientists that have chipped away at the predominant theory. The predominant theory is the gene theory that you alluded to, called the somatic mutation theory. And that's been around with us. You know, it sort of built up during the 20th century, but really got established in the mid-70s. And nobody has really ever since looked back. It's been a very dogmatic theory that nobody questioned from that point on. But these sort of select group of scientists have been chipping away at this new image of cancer that says that, you know, it's not a genetic disease, that it could be a metabolic disease in origin. And that was what my book was about. And it's, you know, it's got that sort of scientific kind of investigative mystery story quality because it's still unfolding and there's still, you know, this controversy going on. But I think that it's coming to a point where there's enough luminaries in the field that are questioning the gene theory that I think it's at a tipping point now.
I think it was interesting, Travis, that when I was lecturing at Society for Integrative Oncology this year, I was sitting next to, after my lecture, I was sitting next to an oncologist, one of the major institutions, and I said something about the metabolic theory of cancer, and she said, "What is that?" And I explained it to her, which I want you to explain to our listeners, and she said, "Well, that makes perfect sense. Why have I not heard of this?" So that's why we're doing all these shows, and that's why we're doing everything that we are doing. But let's let you tell the listeners, what do we mean when we say it's a metabolic disease?
Right.
You do a
okay.
great job of explaining that.
Yeah. So I guess the good way to start is with the contrast with what the right. disease is characterized as now, which is a genetic disease. And that says that over time you'll receive key mutations to your genes and your nuclear DNA. That are responsible for controlling cell division or the cell cycle, we call it. And these are called oncogenes and tumor suppressor genes. And when you get this right combination of what we call driving genes and then tumor suppressor genes, which are the brakes to cell division, then you can kick off this process called neoplasm or cancer. And the cells begin dividing pathologically, invading, you know, going through membranes, invading other tissues and organs. That's the way it's been viewed for the last 50 years. The metabolic theory is actually a very old theory that was first proposed by Otto Warburg, a German biochemist, in 1924. And it states that the key trigger to cancer is not genetic mutations, but what damage to the respiratory system of the cell. In other words, the energy system. And our cells make energy in these little organelles called mitochondria. So he stated that the prime cause of cancer was damage to the mitochondria, which then transforms the metabolic environment of the cell, which switches it over from oxidative metabolism, which is energy creation using oxygen, which all your normal healthy cells do, to this kind of fermentive metabolism, which uses blood sugar and then kicks out a waste product called lactic acid. So he noticed that first in 1924 that cancer cells are, in the presence of oxygen, we're kicking out lactic acid and doing this weird fermentative metabolism. And then he went on to say that this was the prime origin of cancer. Now, he just didn't have, his career didn't span enough technological advancements where he could really characterize this further. And that's where it kind of got, he was this brilliant scientist who won the Nobel Prize, but at the end of his lifetime, he was sort of ridiculed for this, overly simplistic view of what cancer was, as the genes theory kind of swept into favor. But then it didn't go away. It kind of smoldered along, and this brilliant biochemist at Johns Hopkins named Peter Peterson really picked up Warburg's torch and continued to characterize this metabolic defect within the cancer cell, these damaged mitochondria and all the consequences. And then the one that really picked up the torch from there was Thomas Seyfried at Boston College, and he's sort of the godfather of this metabolic theory of cancer in its, you know, most current incarnation.
But these guys have been, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, they've been pretty much working on the sidelines. I mean, the establishment hasn't given it a great deal of credence until fairly recently.
No, it hasn't. And, the way the establishment works is you have to establish something for anything to change in standard of care, it's got to go through these long, onerous clinical trials. So it's going to take decades. It's got to go through phase one, phase two, phase three. And metabolic therapies by nature are combinational. So it takes dietary stuff. It takes certain combinations of drugs, perhaps hyperbaric oxygen. So the clinical trials are very difficult to perform and are going to take a long time. The paradigm, you know, the way we use the treatments we use now, typically chemo and radiation, have been around for so long, they're just not going to change overnight. The whole system is set up to maintain that kind of, you know, standard of care that we have right now. And we wouldn't expect it to. We have to have that burden of proof to prove that it works first. But there's pockets where people are doing these. And the outcomes, you know, so far have been eye-popping. There's a group in Turkey that really latched on to Tom Seyfried's work early on. And what they do is they give the lowest dose range of chemotherapy that they can get away with lawfully in the country. So there's a certain dose range of chemo that they have to use. They use the very lowest dose that they can. And just step back one second. This whole idea of metabolic therapy is that we the way we treat cancer now is extraordinarily caustic and inflammatory, right? We do these needle biopsies, we irradiate, we give chemotherapy. All these things are toxic, they're inflammatory. We don't consider that. And the basic biology of the cancer cell is this is what's driving the disease, is this inflammatory process. And kind of an interesting clinical, or it's a retrospective trial to sort of allude to this, is this grad student looked at the data on women that had breast cancer, and he noticed that after surgery, there's a certain percentage of recurrence, right? And what happens when you do surgery is you create a wound, and so the immune system goes to that to the wound, the platelets release all these growth factors, and that's what drives cancer. So that he noticed that the women that got just a $10 shot of this non-steroidal anti-inflammatory compound during the surgery, it's called Carilac, looked at their data, and they had a 75% reduction in recurrence after surgery. That's a huge number. That's from a $10 anti-inflammatory shot. So the basic biology is just simple. You're preventing that inflammatory wound process, at least, you know, a small amount, and the consequences of that's profound. So the idea behind these metabolic therapies is you want to just tone down everything, the inflammatory process, all those things that we're doing that causes that. And so that's what they're doing in Turkey. They lowest dose of chemo, they put patients on ketogenic diets, they use combinations of drugs that further lower blood glucose, drive down inflammation, hyperbaric oxygen, and then they publish their outcomes compared to historical survival. And it should make everybody notice, because their outcomes are fantastic.
Right. Well, Travis, still tell us too, though. I mean, you know, you and I are collaborating next week on a big center and a research center, and you've got some things going with the group of Care Oncology, where we are starting to collaborate with some of the traditional oncologists with some of these therapies in this country. Would you want to touch on that a little bit about what you have going in California, if that's public knowledge yet?
Yeah, well, I'm part of Care Oncology, which is, it's a group that actually got started in the UK, and they're part of the Seek Pharmaceutical Group, and they're another group of guys that really got turned on to Tom Seyfried's metabolic theory of cancer, and looked at it from that angle, and what treatments were available to us right now that address that and could be used adjunctively, not to compete with standard of care, but that we could help enhance it. Mm-hmm. And they developed this combination of four common medications, repurposed drugs, that sort of, you know, act under these metabolic pathways, and started treating patients back about 5 years ago. And then the idea was to collect clinical data as we went along. And they have it's been submitted to a journal right now, the trial on GBM, glioblastoma. When you add these four drugs to standard of care, you see a doubling in overall survival. Just from four simple common drugs that affect, metabolic processes. So I'm involved in that.
For our listeners, glioblastoma is one of the fastest growing, you know, horrible tumors that you can get. It is a brain cancer. So when you can make a change in that, that's a big deal.
It's a monster. It's the one that took John McCain.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way we treat it now, you know, it's amazing. It hasn't changed for so long. It's temozolomide. It's a common chemotherapy, and then radiation and surgery. You know, it's all the same sort of paradigm that hopefully we can kind of step away from.
Right.
But how far are we away from stepping away from that?
Unfortunately, probably a long time, Sandy, because we have to perform those. You know, this the trial that has to be done is, you have to do standard of care, and then you have to do standard of care with metabolic therapies. And then the dream trial is to have metabolic therapies on their own and compare them head to head with those other ones. And then once you do that in a large trial and you can prove it definitively, then, you know, the paradigm will change.
So what is that in terms of years, Travis?
Oh, you know, we like... Dr. Ward and I are doing our best to speed this up, but
right.
You know, optimistically because GBM is such a fast moving cancer, you know, you could perform that trial relatively quickly, but it takes so much money and then organizing with, you know, the centers and all that. It takes somebody with a lot of money and the right motivation, and then we can get it done.
But for our listeners to know, though, I mean, that we're talking about moving the mountain of the paradigm to change, but these therapies are available now. Both Travis and I, You know, we have resource consultations. We have patients that come, and we can say, you can work with your traditional oncologist, or if they've been given up by the traditional oncology and they say, we're done, we can help guide them. Some of these therapies are things that patients are doing now. My patients, you know, we and Travis's, that we can see the tumor shrinking. We see clinically these things working. So it's not that we have to wait until the paradigm changes. We have clinical trials that they can go into, and then they can even start some of these therapies, no matter what else that they are doing, the ketogenic diet, hyperbaric, the things that we're talking about. So the good news is that we are guiding patients right now. And the other good news is that in standard of care, that means, you know, the moving that paradigm, most of the time, once you have proven the efficacy and the safety of something, it's still a minimum of 11 years after you prove it before it becomes standard of care. And we're not waiting. We're not waiting. We haven't waited. We are utilizing things that are helping patients right now. And we're not waiting that 11 years. We do want to go and change the paradigm. That's why we're doing the work that we're doing, to be able to, so everyone's standard of care will change. But in the meantime, we are helping now.
Yeah, and well, you see that, Dr. Warren, don't you? You see the patients that adopt these therapies and do them well and maintain, you know, a good attitude, they just do better. It's so apparent to us. Our second patient is one of those patients with a glioblastoma, and she's done all the things just fantastically well at 16 months with no evidence of a recurrence.
Right, unheard of. Tell them what's normal, though. Normal.
Yeah, recurrence typically occurs 6 to 8 months after diagnosis. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I have a question about that we'll come back to after the break. You're listening to What Is Going On's Truth in Medicine show, and tonight Dr. Warden and I are talking to science writer Travis Christofferson about his riveting book, Tripping Over the Truth, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer, which boldly challenges our current understanding and treatment of cancer. We'll be back with more after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, talk, touch their hair. Details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones we carry with us every day. Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. I have a question for you both. I'm leading on from where we left off before the break. You were talking about the work that you're doing and that people can have access, you know, to some of this now and to clinical trials. But, you know, is insurance covering it? Is this only for people who can afford special treatment or to be able to go to, you know, travel around to certain clinics where it's available?
You know, The good thing about these, Sandy, number one, if you're relatively well-versed, curious, you know, and have the time, ketogenic diets, you know, you can learn a lot on your own. It's a diet. To do it really, really well, though, it is a tricky diet, and it helps to have, you know, obviously coaching, and there's people that do that, and it's not terribly onerously expensive. And the metabolic therapies, you know, the medications that we're talking about are generics. So they're literally, the ones we use are about $60 per month. So it's kind of fortuitous that the first sort of wave of these, you know, treating cancer metabolically, it's very cheap and reasonable, and so it's accessible to everybody. Typically off-label stuff like that is not covered by insurance. Sometimes a few things can be, but for the most part, it's not.
So, it's interesting that ketogenic diet has become really big, not just relating to cancer. You know, everybody seems to be on it, and it's supposed to be great for one's general health and, for losing weight. So many people want to lose weight. But how does it actually work with cancer?
So the ketogenic diet, interestingly, was standard of care therapy for childhood epilepsy in the 20s. Mm-hmm. And then the anti-epileptic drugs came out, and it just got completely forgotten. And then it got sort of revived by, now I'm drawing a blank on his name, Dr. Freeman at Johns Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And he was doing it just, you know, treating patients kind of quietly on his own and getting these enduring remissions when they were responding to medications. What really brought it in the spotlight then is when Jim Abrahams, the movie director, mm-hmm. when his son got a Charlie and he took it to Johns Hopkins, and he'd been through dozens of drugs and was, you know, rapidly declining. They put him on the ketogenic diet, and he immediately stopped having seizures. And Jim was so befuddled and confused and angry by this that he made the movie First Do No Harm with Meryl Streep just to sort of make this, you know, public knowledge known. How could this therapy that's basically free that anybody could have access to, it was not known. You know, he found it in the back pages of a textbook he just happened to grab when he was in the library, desperately looking for anything to help his kid. So it's been around, and it's been known for a long time. The way it works with epilepsy, we really don't know. We don't know if it's ketones. We don't know if it's sort of this caloric restriction process, what it is. It's just sort of miraculous. It does something to the neurochemistry that just works. As far as cancer goes, it's really a sort of easy to explain, elegant, sort of theoretical mechanism. When you go into ketosis, you shift your sort of general metabolism from burning carbohydrates and blood sugar to burning ketone bodies. And cancer cells, like I said earlier, have shifted to this fermentive metabolism where they burn blood sugar and kick out lactic acid. And the reason they do that is because their mitochondria are supposedly damaged compared to, as Tom Seyfried says, ketone bodies can only be burned in intact mitochondria. So the healthy cells can transition to ketone bodies and the cancer cells can't. All of a sudden they're presented with this fuel that they can't burn. So it makes this sort of, you know, this beautiful therapeutic differential that we always look for, where healthy cells are made more robust and healthier and cancer cells are made weakened and made more vulnerable. And then you come in with what we call these pulse strategies, like hyperbaric oxygen, something that can kill, that, you know, can further wound the cancer cells, and you get this sort of enhanced effect from that. And ironically, too, when people go into radiation or chemotherapy in a ketogenic state, whether it's from a ketogenic diet or just from fasting beforehand, we think there's going to be a greater enhancement of that therapy. You're going to get a greater output, and they're starting to have the data that really alludes to that. But also you're going to have much fewer side effects, and that's been measured, where you see number of mouth sores. All these effects from chemo and radiation are diminished because it's a very powerful, powerful anti-inflammatory state to be in metabolically. So that's kind of, you know, the way you look at it from that basic biology standpoint.
Does this mean that ordinary people who are on a ketogenic diet, not necessarily a clinically monitored one, but a ketogenic diet, are actually safeguarding themselves against cancer?
You know, those experiments would be hard to do. Theoretically, yes. And because when we look at, we know that the cancer rates are higher in type 2 diabetics. And that's just the progression of this sort of metabolic derangement, where you lose insulin sensitivity. The ketogenic diet, you know, you go back to this state of being not needing insulin as much, and all these things. What happens when you're on a ketogenic diet is you kind of naturally restrict calories. And we've known for a long time that caloric restriction is, you know, incredibly healthy to the whole biology of our bodies. It extends lifespan, prevents all sort of neurodegeneration, all these things. So yeah, theoretically the answer to that would be yes, but I think those studies would, you know, those would take a long time to really bear that out.
I think just remembering, you know, for our listeners is that we all have cancer cells floating around in us. Whether we have a tumor growing or not, we all have some potential there. And so what I have my patients is cycle, even if it's just a few times a year, to get into a ketogenic state. They like it. They lose a little weight. And I say potentially help maybe decrease some replication or some what we're trying to do is starve out any of those cancer cells. And when you get a PET scan and it lights up, that's just the example, and that's the Warburg effect that Travis was talking about. What do you think it's lighting up from? When they put the sugar into your vein, into the blood, it goes to where the cancer is, and that's why it lights up, because cancer loves sugar. We've got to remember that and know that we can't make a lot of medical statements or claims at this point, but we know certain things, and so how could it not be helpful to us in many ways? Neurologically, cancer, weight loss, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know, Sandy, you had asked me before the show, and Travis, you know, these researchers that we keep talking about, Tom Seyfried. In fact, I just talked to Dr. Seyfried 30 minutes ago about this this process that we're talking about next week in Colorado. I think we'll bring that up later in the show. He's so excited about it because we're all looking for ways that we can help patients now faster and better than we have. But also Dr. Young Ko, which is one of the researchers that you brought up in your book, and now, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with the group, I will say, from your book that we're all working with. And Sandy had wanted to know what was up with 3-bromopyruvate, and I'll just quickly say in talking with Dr. Ko is that she, too, with that molecule now, has new research showing that that can be helpful if you choose chemo and radiation. It can help you use less of it and be more effective. The same type of ways that you were talking about hyperbaric and ketogenic diet before. If we choose traditional therapies and if that's the way to go, it's possible that many of these adjunctive treatments may help us do better and have less of the toxic effects of the chosen therapies. And that's exciting to think that we can go down that route. But also remembering, in time, with more research, these may be monotherapies, which means they stand alone and we don't need the rest of it. And in Society for Integrative Oncology this year, just a month ago, Dr. Andrew Weil stood up at the front as the keynote lecturer and said to a group of medical oncologists, hundreds in the room, he said, I think that in time we're going to look back at chemo and radiation the same way that we used to when kids wanted to have their mothers wanted to see if their shoes were fitting in their feet. They would x-ray their feet, and we were exposing them to ionizing radiation. And we look back and go, what in the world were we thinking? And he said, I think we're going to do the same thing with chemo and radiation. And I believe that as well. But for now, that's the standard of care.
Well, what was the response to him saying that?
You know what? These are integrative, Society for Integrative Oncology. So there's a little pushback. There's a little bit of the hands in front, because that's how they are treating patients now. But they are open to listening, and they understand the mind-body section, at least that. They're very open to meditation and to, yoga. They love that piece. But when we start talking about these other therapies, it's a little more turf oriented, but I applauded him for that, and many in the audience did. And that, but remember, that's the group of oncologists that think that there are other things that play into cancer, mind body wise, diet, this and that, not just all we have is chemo and radiation.
Yeah, this mind body, you know, there's emerging research out of that that's getting really interesting in terms of social genomics. And you can measure people. You know, one of the biggest things to our health and happiness is loneliness, not being lonely,
yes, right.
having just
yes.
a rich network of support. And you can measure that now genomically, that the immune system will switch to a more inflammatory profile in people that report, you know, being lonely.
Yes.
And there was a big study where they tracked over 3,000 women with breast cancer, and those that had really rich networks of friends and family to help them survived, you know, over 3 years longer than those that reported having less of that. So, you know, all these factors, stress, you know, cortisol being raised, having support, all these things that we kind of diminished before, are, you know, now we're able to measure them more effectively, and we see that they're really, really important.
Yeah, it's all coming together now, isn't it? I mean, the whole mind-body connection, we're really seeing the evidence of that.
That's right. And that particular group, Society for Integrative Oncology, they really get that piece. The stress piece, they really do. We've got to educate them more on metabolic therapies. I'm hoping that we're going to get a lecture on this next year. Travis, get ready. We'll be talking to you soon about it. We have to put together an abstract and get it. I will say this. They let me talk about homeopathic injections this year for liver and gallbladder because they're always saying, how do we keep those going during chemo and radiation, right? That's usually many of the times why they have to stop. Because of those, that organ shut down. And so they were interested that I had something natural and had data on it for these injections. So they let me talk about homeopathy. So I really believe we can get a metabolic lecture going.
You know, as a layperson who, you know, who doesn't have the advantage of the knowledge that you guys have got, I look at cancer, and I have a very close relative who's been fighting cancer and going the traditional chemo route. And I've attended many of her appointments with her, and I've heard the doctors say every time she brings up a question like, oh, you know, what about high doses of vitamin C? What about this? What about that that I've read about? And all they'll say is, oh, that's not in our protocol. We've got no evidence about that. And they cannot. They're not allowed to even discuss it in certain places. I mean, I know that they have to protect the public. I know that there have to be protocols in place. But does it really have to be such a slow, grinding business?
Man, that's such a psychologically loaded topic, Sandy. I think, you know, from my perspective, what I see with oncologists is they really do have brutally difficult jobs from the standpoint of complexity. And, you know, people come in with a variety of cancers. Each treatment is different. There's multiple ways you can treat each cancer. So I think what happens is the standard of care is difficult enough, and they just draw that line. Okay, that's my job, and I want to do it well, and I'm just, you know, if you start bringing in supplements and everything else, it just becomes so hard and complex for them that they almost have to draw that line. So I think some of that comes from that it's just too hard otherwise. A lot of it comes from not being open-minded. You know, there's just and I don't think that they, in many times, they weigh – from the patient's perspective, they're looking at everything from a risk-reward perspective. Okay, high-dose vitamin C, is it going to hurt me? Could it potentially help? You know, that's the way the patient's looking at it, and that's all they're really asking for the input for that question. And that's where I think they could do better, is just steering them, you know, to look at these things through the lens of risk-reward in a better way. You know, everybody talks about the dietary advice. It doesn't matter. The oncologist will say, oh, go eat donuts. It just doesn't matter what you eat. We hear that all the time. But, you know, how could that be? The patients intuitively know that's not the case. Yeah. And so they're looking for these answers and advice from other places. And I think in the end, you know, we'll need a new branch. We'll need a branch of metabolic oncology, you know, to help out. And you look at sort of the history of medicine, and we always – really emphasized the self-sufficiency of the doctor, the doctor's intuition above all else. What happened, though, is the complexity of medicine has outstripped the human mind's ability to do it effectively alone. So we need systems in place that help oncologists. We need, you know, adjunctive therapies. We're going to need all these groups of people to help just because of the complexity. Is that your feeling too, Dr. Ward?
Right, exactly. And that's why we're bringing together our group of metabolic, Dr. Seyfried, yourself, me, let's see, Dominic, Dr. D'Agostino, Dr. Koh, Dr. Elliott. These are people mentioned in your book, and we are getting together in Colorado next week for a summit. And I was talking to Dr. Seyfried today, and, you know, we all agree we come up with our own types of protocols. Right now, you know, I have oncologists that will say, Dr. Warden, I want to send a patient to you for vitamin C IV. And I'll say, okay, but what about the timing? And that's what I'm learning from the researchers, from Elliott, from Dr. D'Agostino right now. Dom just told me that he's got a research going right now. It's too early to tell, but they're doing a vitamin C IV research. We'll know. Mm-hmm. And what's more important, we'll know when. Is it before, during, after chemo, different therapies? When is it best? When can it actually contraindicate? So if you're doing an oxidative therapy, you don't want to do an antioxidant. Patients go, I just want to take vitamin C. Can't that help my immune system? And I said, depends on if we want if we want to just seek and destroy or if we're in the rebuild. So it's all about timing. And that's the beauty and why we're pulling this group together, so that we can look at each other's research. We can look at the clinical and say, here's the timing, because those open-minded oncologists are saying, okay, I'm done, or I don't know, and here, just go see, you know, Dr. Warden, go see Travis at Care Oncology, and let them do what they do. But it's a lot of it is about timing, and we're getting there. We're really getting there. So that's the exciting piece. I can't wait for us to spend more time together.
Yeah, it's going to be a process. You're right. It's going to be, it's not going to be one thing. It's going to be a process with timing, dosages.
That's right.
It's going to look very different than it did in the past. It's going to take a lot of, you know, a lot of people and effort and research. And I think, you know, we have a group, we have some doctors in LA at Cedars-Sinai that are considering opening a clinic, a metabolic type clinic, you know, adjunctive clinic in that area, that are just tired of seeing people die. And it's coming from a place of, you know, we just want to do better, and what's it going to look like? So it depends on the individual. You know, I think that there's a lot of open-minded oncologists out there that are you know, ready for something like this.
You're listening to What Is Going On's Truth in Medicine show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and this month Dr. Denise Warden and I are speaking with science researcher Travis Christofferson about his book, Tripping Over the Truth, which explores the new metabolic theory of cancer. We'll be back with more after this break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back. Travis, Dr. Denise, tell me more about what's happening in Colorado. It sounds really exciting and incredibly hopeful.
I am so excited about it, and I think all of us that will be there are excited about it, because we really want to realize this dream of a foundation, and Travis has foundations. Everybody's got a little bit, a large foundation where we're collecting money for research on these metabolic therapies, but also a clinic where we can actually start the therapies instead of right now when patients call me or they talk to me, then I have to find a hyperbaric somewhere near them. I have to find a doctor that's willing to do this. I have to find somebody to help them ketogenic. We'll have an area where they come and they stay and they heal and they can do the therapies, learn it, and do it. So a healing center, also a research center, because a lot of the alternative places or clinics, they say, we can heal you, we'll do vitamin C IDs, we'll do this, and they're not collecting the data. And that is not the way it should be done. We really want to do it correctly, scientifically, collect the data and do everything by the book, so to speak, but open it up where we can start helping people. And we want to realize the dream with tremendous talent. So if you read Travis's book and you read the people in the book, there's a few people outside of the book now because they've come along since then, but they are going to be part of this summit. We're going to sit in a room. We're going to be together for 3 days, and we want to come with creative ways to collaborate with one another, with the universities, with the researchers to bring this forward. So it's very exciting, and I'm just so appreciative that all the researchers are coming. And I talked to Dr. Siegfried, and he says, well, you know, usually you start with the clinicians or you start with this or that. And I said, no. Where do you think we get our ideas? Where do you think that, you know, we are getting our protocols? It comes from the researchers. And so I this whole concept is starting with the researchers in the metabolic theory, getting them together. How do we support them and how do we push this forward? And we already have entrepreneurs on board. We've got people who want to fund. It's going to push it faster than it could have gone individually with those of us just trying to help patients one at a time, you know, with their particular cancer. So I'm very excited, and we know the problem. We have some solutions, and when we put our heads together with this tremendous talent, with the intent of individualized medicine, one person, not just a protocol, everybody gets the same thing. No, what does that patient need in that moment? And we all, by the way, understand that and believe that, all the researchers and everybody that's going to be there. So we're ready to play big with luminaries to bring this forward.
So can you clarify Colorado. For me? Yeah, can you clarify for me? This is a research center. Is it also a treatment center?
Yes, it is both. It'll be right now we're believing that the research part will be a nonprofit that funds the research portion of this. But it will be a clinic where patients come to have treatment. Not only that, they will be able to stay. It's a destination in a beautiful, beautiful area where they can come, and we're doing the mind-body therapies. We're helping them with that stress. We're helping them with those pieces, not just the physical therapies that need to go on to help them as well. And above all else, helping them make their decisions in the right mindset, out of fear, out of hurriness. What are their options, and how do they make their decisions of how they want to treat their diseases?
Wow. So that's pretty revolutionary.
It is. I mean, everybody's doing it on a small level. Every physician that wants to do this. I mean, Travis has a wonderful Care Oncology has brought their therapies here, and I've referred patients to Travis's group. When they have certain types of cancer, I say, you know what? This is where I think you need to go. They're going to do chemo radiation, and they may fit within Travis's protocol, right, that what they have going on. There's others that have been cut loose from the system. We've done all we can do. Or others that say, I don't want to do that. Or they say, what can I do in conjunction? And I'm having to, one patient at a time, try to take them through and help them, and I'm doing it. But this is going to be big. We can help many, many people. And all the researchers, and Travis, you do too. You guys get calls. You're not clinicians. So you can't treat them. So you're getting all these calls for where do we get these therapies. And so this will be a place where we can help them, more of them than I can one at a time, find where they need to be and how they need help and where they should be going.
Yeah, it's always been pieced together. You're right. You learn about the diet here. You have to figure out where to get hyperbaric oxygen if you want to do that, and all these things. And then the Turkey model, it's called chemothermia in Istanbul. They really put it together in one spot, and then we see the potency of that. And that's the first iteration of this. We know that this can be approved upon, and that's the model sort of going forward. You know, it's difficult because the traditional way is to measure one therapy at a time. We're going to be looking at, at rationally designed combinations and then measuring the outcome. And we know we have to do this. If we're really going to beat this disease, it's the model that has to be adopted. So it's, you know, it's a beautiful model. It's exciting to be part of it.
So
it's not just one treatment, Sandy, right? It's not one treatment.
Yeah.
It's going to be a combination of treatments, individualized. And when you get these minds together with their research, with their different therapies, and we and Tom and I, Dr. Siegfried and I were talking about it today, we'll figure this out. We're going to know exactly what to do. Right now, we're doing the best that we can.
Is the ketogenic diet at the basis of all of it, or is that only one part of it?
You know, I think a really good sort of baseline paper to go off is the one Dominic D'Agostino and Tom Seyfried wrote, and they call the therapy press pulse. And the foundational therapy is kind of the ketogenic diet, and it puts you in this physiological state where then you can start you can sort of manipulate it from that point. And then once the cancer cells are stressed, then you add in pulses. And the pulse can be in the form of hyperbaric oxygen, where it's like radiation. It kills cancer cells the same way. Radiation is what we call ionizing radiation. So it splits water molecules, creates free radicals, and then that's what kills the cancer cells. Hyperbaric oxygen is just a much more mild form of that generation of free radicals. So those are the pulses, but you do them intermittently. You do that through timing, importantly, you do it so it's not extraordinarily caustic to the patient. It sounds utopian to say it, and I have no doubt we'll get there. We always tend to judge things, you know, in our little blink of an eye. We're not here very long, and these things take a long time. But we will get to the point where cancer therapies, where you come out healthier on the other side. Where actually it's a therapeutic process, and it's going to take time to get there. But this is the start of that. This is sort of the theoretical foundation of what that will look like.
And so, Travis, before the show, remember we were talking the same therapies that we're talking about that are going to help with cancer and neurological diseases. It is anti-aging. It's the same processes that we're dealing with. When we figure these pieces out and we get better at it, that is anti-aging. It's not just anti-cancer.
I firmly believe, the best cancer therapies will be anti-aging therapies. But when you look at the process of aging, it's this, you know, we see these very defined epigenetic changes. And I can look at, a researcher can take your cells, anybody's cells, analyze the epigenetic patterns, what we call the methylation patterns, and tell you your biological age within 2 years. And it's probably a more accurate depiction of your true age than your chronological age. Mm-hmm. So that's how accurate it is. So we see it's called epigenetic drift. You see these changes in your epigenome over time. When you look at a cancer cell, it looks like a 300-year-old cell. It's like it's on aging and hyperdrive. So these same sort of processes that cause aging are like put on, you know, on fast forward in cancer cells. And the way we reverse aging, and you can reverse aging in a petri dish, it's called stem cell induction. And you sort of reset or reboot the epigenome back to biological age zero. And we can do that now in the lab. And these same therapies that do that also tend to be anti-cancer therapies. And so you'll be able to reset the genome, back to this normalized state, cancer cells, which is also a de-aging state. So, those two therapies, they overlap. And I think, in the end, it'll be one and the same.
And we have focused a lot on cancer, but of course, restricted ketogenic diet is good for all kinds of neurological diseases like Alzheimer's, ALS, brain trauma, etc.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very correct. Ketone bodies are strangely therapeutic to neurons. Your brain just loves ketone bodies, and even something like traumatic brain injury. So you can measure that when when mice are on ketone bodies and then they undergo traumatic brain injury, it's a horrible experiment, but it's lessened by the ketone bodies. And so, you know, I think every NFL football player should take an exogenous ketone before a game.
Right.
But yeah, they're incredibly, incredibly, they're incredibly sort of restorative for neurons.
So, you know, that brings up, we had Sandy, whenever we were talking about the research center, they, you know, people were saying, well, are there going to be my studies? Are going to be this and that? And I told them, I said, there's a way of researching in a beautiful way, like Young Ko, her research, when she was explaining how she treats her mice, and it was in Travis's book too, they're kind of like pets, and she talks to them. She feeds them herself, and she says, I'm going to make you sick, but then I'm going to make you better. So there is, you know, there is a beautiful thought of that they are contributing, they're respected, they're loved, and there will be no animal cruelty. I think there's a difference between animal research and animal cruelty, and I think we've got to do a better education on that for people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And many people will be very happy to hear that.
Right, right.
So another question I had was, and I hope I'm not going off-piste here, but we've talked a lot about the ketogenic diet. There's a lot of products around that can instantly, you know, create ketosis, powders that you can take, etc. Are they as effective as actually doing the diet as itself?
That's a great question, Sandy.
And,
and my, you know, that'll take time to figure that out. I would say that intuitively, no. I think that the benefit you get from the ketogenic diet is, a lot of it is because you sort of, when you eat a high fat diet like that, it changes the sort of there's factors that come into play that suppress appetite, and so you sort of naturally caloric restrict. And so some of the benefit may not just be from the ketone bodies by themselves, but from the sort of calorically restricted state that you're in. And who knows? I mean, we try to figure out these mechanisms and extrapolate outward and predict biology, but we're so complex that, you know, it's so difficult to do that. We know that these caloric restriction methods work, and they're incredibly restorative, and that's kind of the fundamental basis behind the ketogenic diet.
Sandy, I'll say some of those products, some patients, because of their blood sugar, because of other things and their stress levels, it's hard for them to get into ketosis as high as we'd like for them to be. So that's where sometimes those can be aids to help. But I'm with Travis. You need the high fat. There's other things that go along with the caloric restriction that I think the diet is the best. But I think we'll get better. And I know that Dominic D'Agostino is going beyond the ketone salts, going into esters. I think we're going to have some aids that help us, but we can't ever get past the fact that our diet, we are what we eat. We are. And that food is critical. And it won't be just a product that we take and we can eat whatever we want.
Well, we're almost out of time now. One last question. As people who are at the edge of this cutting edge research and breakthrough, these protocols, etc., are you glimpsing some potentials for other things that could come out of this that you haven't mentioned, that you're not necessarily focusing on right now, but give cause for great excitement?
Oh, man. You want me to take that, Dr. Ward?
Yeah, go ahead, Travis.
It's got to be brief,
well,
Travis.
Very brief, but yeah, I just what I touched on earlier, you know, we can take a 90-year-old skin cell and add a combination of small molecules now and turn that cell into a stem cell and then turn it back into a skin cell, and that biological round trip will completely de-age it from a 90-year-old cell to biological age zero. So it's entirely restored. Mitochondrial function is brand new. Telomeres lengthen. And I there's no reason to think that we won't be someday able to do that in vivo and sort of restore our stem cell population. So I know it sounds science fiction-like, but the basic science is there, and it's easy to extrapolate that outward. Yeah.
Wow.
That means any and all things, Sandy.
Can I sign up to be your guinea pig?
Yeah, we've got a new, I will say, and Travis, I haven't talked to you about it yet, but there is a new, even skincare line where we're starting to do some types of things like that just to see what we see, but we think we're pretty excited about it. So we want to look as good as we feel, and we want to slow down the aging process so that now, as spiritual, wonderful beings that we are, that we can do the work that we are here to do and not be sick and not have our lives cut short, but to be able to do the work, the good work for the humanity and be able to do it. So that's the big purpose here. It's not just to look good and feel good, but we've got work to do.
Well,
Travis,
said.
Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for writing the book. I tell you, it truly is one of the most exciting reads that
it
I've
is.
Had in
Every
a long
story.
Time, and I encourage everybody to get it.
Right.
Thank you, Jenny.
So good luck, and come back and tell us, you know, about the next step.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Tripping Over the Truth, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer, is available on Amazon and can be ordered at your local bookstore. For more information on the topics discussed tonight, visit www.foundationformetabolickcancertherapies.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer.
And I'm Dr. Donnie Wharton. Thank you for joining us.
We'll be back next month.